It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGIF crew, I am Chris Dover, and welcome to Firearm Friday. This week we're going to be talking with Brett Walker from Seismic Ammo. They are the purveyors of a pretty innovative ammunition line that uses heavyweight projectiles. But first, let's talk a little bit about AR-500 armor. Now, AR-500 armor can obviously meet your body armor plate carrier steel target needs, but they also carry other things over there as well. You can check out some of their medical supplies as well as their apparel that's over there at ar500armor.com. Again, that's ar500armor.com. We have Brett in the house with Seismic Ammo. How are you, Brett?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm super duper, man. I'm great. All things considering. So you guys are fresh off of SHOT Show. So how was that experience?
SHOT Show was a very good experience for us. So we were able to introduce the new ammunition line, which is starting off with the 185 grain 9mm. And then so we had a lane at range day, and then obviously a booth there at the show. So we got a lot of interest, a lot of pickup. Things went really well.
That's great. That's pretty consistent with what I was hearing throughout the show. Everybody, from the vendors to the dealers, the media side of things, everybody was just having a great show. Everybody was laid back. Everybody was very talkative and visiting and open to, new products and new ideas and that sort of thing. With you guys, I mean, I guess you came on my radar range day. Very impressed with the stuff you had set out on the table. And then when I believe you loaded three rounds of the 185 grain 9mm behind three rounds of regular 115 grain. Was that correct?
That is correct.
And it was pretty amazing. I could tell, I shoot enough, I could tell a slight difference, but I'm not real sure that the average person out there would be able to tell that, which was pretty impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, there was a lot of work that went into tuning what that recoil impulse was, because the last thing we want is, as soon as you hear really, really heavyweight ammo, there's a lot of those questions and skepticism that pops up. And one of the first ones, and understandably so, is, hey, is this going to, all of a sudden turn my soft shooting handgun into a cannon? And while it's got a nice defensive load in there, the answer we're trying to say is no. Because we've really tried to tune that recoil impulse to where it shoots just like anything else would.
Right. And aside from the felt recoil, I mean, you've also got potentially with heavier weight ammo, you've got that potential for wear and tear on your internals as well.
That's correct. And we tried to approach that from understanding that that's going to be a primary concern as well. So first off, we've tested this in everything, all the way from your higher-end weapons, just like at the range day, it was out of USP. USPs are notoriously pretty overbuilt, frankly, so you're never going to – it's really hard to really damage USP unless you've really done something wrong. And then – but we've also run it – and of course, you've got your other NATO firearms like Glock, et cetera, really high quality. Frankly, as long as you're doing your part, you're not going to damage one of those in general. They're very reliable firearms. But we also have run this through all the way down on the other end of the spectrum through high points. So We have tested this through from top to bottom, start to finish, all the way through the spectrum. So that way, regardless of what you have, we can feel very comfortable with people putting it in whatever they have in their home. And then B is we've also designed it to where you're a lot of these wear issues that people are concerned about with a heavy bullet, you're going to have a lot more bearing surface. It's a hotter load, admittedly. It's a NATO load, not a SAMI load. So people are going to be worried about wear and tear. And so we've specifically done with the cases are shell shot cases, which are a nickel stainless steel, which decrease wear significantly on the chamber of your firearm, as well as the bullets themselves have a special lubricious coating on them. They're copper plated lead, but then we do a special plating on the surface of that, so that way it also decreases wear and tear. So we've tried to approach that head on from the start versus trying to sort of, you know, put it under the rug, so to speak. We're very aware of people's concerns there and try to address those up front versus trying to come out with improvements on the back end.
Awesome. I think that's a wonderful approach. With we'll get back into the products here in a minute. I want to deviate first off into a little bit of the history. What is your background, and as far as the concept for this ammunition and the company, how did all that come about?
Yeah, so my background is I have a bachelor's in mechanical and aerospace and a PhD in material science. I used to be a chemist and worked on some energetic materials, et cetera, at National Labs. And then I've had a relationship with Haley Ordnance for a while. And so originally, Haley Ordnance does suppressors. I was doing some consulting work with them. And then Seismic Ammo spun off from Haley Ordnance. It is its own separate entity, first and foremost. It is specifically for ammunition manufacturing. But so basically, based on the work that we were doing there, we decided that this had enough legs. This was going on in the background. We were doing some high-end loads specifically for suppressors, basically. And then we were getting some really good, interesting results and have spun this off on its own as Seismic Ammo. And that's sort of the background and where it came from.
Right. And then as far as the need, what was the specific need for the heavyweight? What was the idea behind that, you know, we need to go with this heavyweight projectile? What was the benefit you were seeking?
Yeah, the philosophy behind it is, so you have, obviously, there's a lot of rounds available these days. So your primary rounds that everybody knows of, or, you know, and everybody probably owns one, is 22 long rifle, 9mm, 45, 12-gauge, 223, and 308. But then you've got all these Wildcat calibers, and even though you have 40 Smith & Wesson is popular, it's not a Wildcat caliber, you've got a bunch of intermediate calibers, right? Mm-hmm. So we sort of came to the line of, with modern powders, modern materials, and really just working up the load from the ground up with the materials that are available now versus what everybody's always been using, sort of traditional aspect, why can't we just address a much larger spectrum with much more common rounds, like 9mm, for example? And so we started there because 9mm is arguably probably the most popular caliber in general from a carry standpoint, a general handgun standpoint, and a defensive standpoint. It's in large circulation. And one of the debates that's as old as time is, you know, 9mm versus 40, 9mm versus 45, 9mm versus, you know, whatever a random cartridge name you want to throw in there, sure. There's always a debate there.
Sure.
And so we decided to heavy into the spectrum that we possibly can. We were already working on a lot of suppressor work and really come up with a really hard-hitting, heavyweight load that really starts to turn heads a little bit here because, you know, what we think with some of the powders, some of the cases, some of the coatings we're working with, we can really stay within safe pressure ranges as far as a NATO pressure spec is concerned and really do something unique and interesting here. So that's sort of the design philosophy behind the entire line of ammunition, because we'll be coming out with other products, but that in short is why we started with 9. It was just the commonality of it.
Right, sure, and I think that was a great move. Now, with your personal background, with your educational background, it sounds to me like it's very apparent that, you know, you guys were and are pushing the bounds of technology in a way. So as far as modeling and getting things, you know, I guess on the drawing board type situation, how long did it take and what was that process like?
Long and painful. So yeah, we're fully versed in a lot of software packages and all that good stuff, but at the end of the day, running it on a computer screen is fantastic. Actually getting it consistently out of various different handguns is a whole different story. So start to finish on the R&D project, it really was 3 years. We've been working on this for 3 years. So this was not a, hey, this is a good idea, we should run with this, and let's run and show it off as soon as we can. We've really spent a lot of time in the background making sure that this is a, you know, a fully fledged, viable product that is robust, not just a, hey, neat idea, oh, wait, there's a lot of other things we still got to fix about this.
Was there any particular hurdle that was more daunting than another?
I won't say there's any one hurdle that was more daunting than another, other than there's been a bunch of hurdles to get over in general.
Gotcha.
we've had the luck of working with really good supply chain partners as far as the bullets that we're working with R&D there, and then, like I said, the shell stock case has been working very well for us. But as you can see, there's just not much room for powder there, so there's a lot of iterating and frankly custom tuning on that, and once you get that done, it's then custom tuning the ogive geometry on the hollow point, so that way you still get reliable expansion at as low a velocity as possible, and then making that function in as many different barrel lengths and chamber types as possible, which sort of run the gamut from manufacturer to manufacturer. So that level of iteration is really not something you can model, and that's just something you got to put everything through its paces, so to speak. So you can understand the theoretical feasibility very quickly with a model, but there's just too many variations from a manufacturing standpoint that at a certain point the rubber's got to hit the road, so to speak, and you just got to start prototyping and iterating from there.
Sure. Now, do you guys just do the assembly, or do you actually manufacture any component in-house?
We do some custom work on the powder. The powder really is what makes this go, so to speak. And then we work with the supply chain partners we're currently working with the commercial reloader to do the commercial reloading, which is currently in process right now as far as availability is concerned. So we understand what we do. Our model is understand what we do well and uniquely bring to the situation, and then not trying to reinvent the wheel trying to copy or do things that other people are doing that already have a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And that, frankly, is kind of being arrogant, so to speak, to say that, you know, we're gonna make a plated lead bullet better than other people that already been doing this for decades are. So why not work with those suppliers, tell them what we want, iterate with them, versus trying to reinvent everything from scratch? Just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Now, with the cases that you guys are using, those are an interesting case for sure. Those that have seen the thumbnail that's going to be on this podcast, or even some of the Instagram pics that's been posted, I've had some questions about that. What can you tell us about the cases that you're using for the cartridges?
Yeah, so those are sourced from Shellshock. We do have a custom anodization on the base that's red, just to denote that it is a NATO/hot load. So for SAMI, on average, that's a plus P in general. But it's on the barrier of plus P. But what's really interesting about the Shellshock cases and why we chose a NATO spec to begin with is, first of all, we get more volume in that case, which, as you can tell, we don't have much volume to work with from a powder standpoint, so we need every little bit we can get. So we chose it from that standpoint. And also, from a reliability and just strength and material standpoint, it really is just worlds away from brass. Don't get me wrong, I reloaded with brass for a very long time. I use Lapua 9mm brass and Starline and everything in between, and brass is great. But when you start worrying about a hotter load and just ultimate reliability and making sure there's no overpressure or any issues that are transferred into the chamber or into the throat of the barrel, there's just a lot of benefits to using a nickel alloy stainless steel, which is what Shellshock uses for the primary portion of the case. It's anodized aluminum on the base. Obviously, there's no real pressure that sees for the most part. It's all internal on the stainless steel portion of the case. So from a strength standpoint, it's just a very reliable case. They've pressure tested these up to 70,000 PSI. Obviously, we're within NATO pressure specs, so we're not anywhere near there. It's just a very robust, reliable case, and that's why we went with it.
Okay, awesome. So aluminum, you said aluminum alloy base with a stainless case, right?
Yeah, the actual meat of the case, so to speak, for all the powder gets loaded into is a drawn nickel alloy stainless steel. Gotcha. And the base is anodized aluminum. So that nickel alloy stainless steel gives us a lot of strength and a lot of reliability you wouldn't get from a brass case.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, you guys are at Oklahoma City, correct?
Correct.
We get up to Tulsa a couple times a year to the Wanamaker Tulsa Arms Show. Have y'all ever made that show before?
Yeah, so not as Seismic. So Haley's done that before with some AR and other accessories, etc. But we will be up there here hopefully this spring. But as far as having actual ammo, etc. But yeah, no, very familiar with the Wanamaker. That's
awesome.
For sure.
Right. Yeah, we make that twice a year. I mean, that's a have to on our schedule. As far as Oklahoma, and you know, one thing I always like to dive into a little bit, not to get too terribly political, but to kind of talk about the environment with a lot of these industry companies and the states that they're in. Fairly friendly environment for you guys there in Oklahoma, I'm assuming.
We really haven't run into any issues, so I have no complaints. It's been a good setup for us.
Okay, good to know. And I'm sure on the ammo side, it probably is not as, doesn't get demonized quite as much as the actual firearm side of things, in most cases anyway. Now,
yeah, in most cases, I would completely agree with you.
Right. Most people don't. The ammunition kind of comes secondary a lot of times, unless you're making something. You know how they demonized once upon a time the Black Talons and things like that. Is you know that can get crazy sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah. No, there definitely are some outliers to that, like you said, with Black Talons and other things. But in general, I would say there is less. Less ire drawn from ammo versus firearms.
Sure. Now let's jump over into the products. Currently, right now, just the 9mm is all that's out there.
Yes. So it will be that our hard release was at SHOT because it's currently in commercial production. It will be getting out to distributors here. It's February 1st right now. So it'll be mid to late February by the time you start seeing it pop up as far as being available, but it is truly in commercial production / imminently released. And then we will be coming out with a 200 grain flat point 9mm as well.
Wow.
As more of a penetration. So we've been able to test up to 200 grains and we can still do some pretty fun things with that. And then later on in the year, we will be introducing a 325 grain hollow point 45 as well as a 350 grain flat point 45. So really heavy 45 long Colt style rounds in an ACP cartridge. And then one thing that looks like will be getting released sooner rather than later, so I would say probably the Q2 time frame of this year, is a 2.5 ounce 12 gauge slug round will also be introduced.
Right.
Currently on the drawing board, and we've started to do some iteration from an R&D standpoint, is a heavyweight. I'm not going to even get into the weights of it yet because there's still a lot of work to be done, but let's just say well north of 90 grains, and it is an actual supersonic long-range cartridge in 5.56x45/223.
Wow.
That is something we're working on right now, as well as a, again, weight yet to be finalized and determined, but it'll be between 215 and 230 grain with a 308/762x51. So that's currently what's on the drawing board as far as the line of ammo is concerned.
And with a 308, that supersonic round with 308?
So when it comes to the rifle side of things, we actually want to make it to where we're getting true long range, less wind drift performance out of the 5.56. So these will be actual, you know, real rifle velocities.
Wow.
Yes.
Very nice. Now the pistols, all the pistols are subsonic?
All the heavyweight pistols are subsonic.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. Gotcha. Now as far as the 9mm... I know we discussed it a little bit there at Range Day, but with the entire SHOT Week, my brain is fried, and I don't necessarily remember the particulars of the conversation.
That's understandable.
But with the comparison to, let's say, you know, 115 grain, even 124 grain ammunition, are we talking better for, you know, self-defense use because of energy transfer? Or what is the plus side of the heavier grain?
So I'm a big believer in having a heavier, just like there's, you know, your diehard 45 ACP fans, even though 45 ACP actually shoots pretty slow, is from the weight standpoint. And so the nice thing about having the round and the geometry that it's in is when it hits, it's after it expands. So there's no secret, there's a lot of really good defensive rounds out there that expand very nicely. I personally, my carry ammo, well, once this is fully available, I'll be using this as my carry ammo. But my carry ammo has always been 127 grain plus B plus Winchester Rangers, and that stuff expands really nicely. It's a good 9mm load. The problem is, with most bullet masses and most geometries, is once it expands, the wound channel's done, basically. It can't go any further, because once it expands, everything's been dissipated and it won't move any further. With our round, you basically still look behind it, that's built into the base. So once it fully to push through. And so we've done extensive gel block testing with it. And what this does is, so about halfway through the gel block, just like any other hollow point, you'll find it, your wound cavity. But unlike others, where once it expands, it really begins to stop. Ours pushes all the way to the end of the gel block, but then it really has expended all of its energy getting to that one gel block, and it stops. So we've even put up 3x5 cards in certain cases at the end of the gel block, and it doesn't even punch all the way through it. It literally expands, creates a large wound channel, pushes the hollow point all the way through, and stops. So it's really the fact that once it opens, you're still creating the wound channel after expansion versus stopping once it's expanded.
I got you, because you've got enough mass behind it, I'm assuming.
Correct.
It's kind of like, like bulldozing through it.
Correct. It's really got the momentum pushing through it, and so it allows, by having that mass behind it, to allow it just to continue to push.
Right. Okay. Wow. And what velocities are we talking about on that 185 grain?
So the 185 grain, if you're shooting out of a G19, G17, which is where a lot of our testing was done, you're looking anywhere from 930 to 950 feet per second roundabout. So fast enough to get good expansion, but slow enough to still be safely in the subsonic range, and still slow enough to where if you put it like in a SIG MPX or some sort of 9mm carbine, you're still not going to be quite up to supersonic yet. So it's a safe subsonic cartridge from a suppression standpoint, while still getting very reliable expansion out of the hollow point.
Right. I know, looking at the ones that were there at range day, and also in the booth at SHOT, also looked like really good expansion and really good retention as well.
That's correct. And so we really don't see any of the jackets sloughing off or anything chipping off. You're really maintaining the weight all the way through.
Right. Now with go ahead.
And it expands all the way up to 3/4 of an inch is what we've been able to measure it up to. So a pretty solid, nice expansion.
And I'm assuming you. Will that be a little bit more expansion once you get into the 200 that's on the deck?
The 200 is a flat point, so it's meant for like a game round, more or less. So
gotcha.
It will not be a hollow point.
That's right. That's right.
Basically, all we're going to be doing is just so the cavity that is the hollow point, we're just going to be filling that in, and it'll just be a solid
round. Right. Fill it in to add the weight. Gotcha.
Yep. Okay. That's it.
Now on expansion with added weight, with the added mass, are they expanding faster than a normal round would?
They do open up relatively quickly, but to be honest, we haven't seen it that it expands extremely more quickly. Our big benefit that we see is once it expands, it keeps pushing versus stopping after the wound channel's been created.
Right.
That's the big benefit we've seen from it.
Right. Gotcha. Now, I know that the 2-ounce slug you had at range day, that was definitely impressive. What stage are you in that?
We're doing finalized load development, and like I said, okay. We're actually trying to get that one out in Q2 of this year. We've already gotten, we can fit it in a 2 3/4 inch shell. That's a 2.5-ounce slug.
Wow.
We can get it up in an 18-inch barrel to around 1,000 to 1,050 feet per second, mm-hmm. without running into any sort of chamber. So you don't have to worry about some sort of special overbuilt receiver or a Magnum-style receiver. It can run through. So that one's actually been going, let's just say, in a more streamlined fashion than the 9mm. The 9mm took a lot of iteration. This mm-hmm. one's actually coming together more quickly, which is nice. So good thing
yeah.
as far as being able to get it put together. So we do plan on being able to release that in Q2, because everything so far has been checking off all the boxes that we have to hit from a chamber pressure, velocity, etc. standpoint. So it's so far so good on that one.
Well, what I hear you saying is, it's like once you get the first one down, the rest of them are, you kind of learn your lessons there, so you're able to sidestep some things, and those subsequent rounds are just a little bit easier maybe.
That's correct. To a certain extent, that's correct. There's always some hiccups that get presented, but once you sort of cut your teeth, so to speak, on one of these and learn all the lessons of the iterations they have to go through, it does make it easier on the subsequent rounds. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Now, with that 2-ounce slug, have y'all done any accuracy testing at all? Have you gotten to that point on it?
We have not gotten to that point. We plan on being able to get to that point by the end of the Q1, where we're really doing all the testing from a barrier standpoint, from a you know, feeding it through everything and doing all the reliability testing through various different platforms. But we are not to that point yet. We're truly finalizing the load right now.
Gotcha. Now with the 9mm, the 185 that you've got coming out, what about it in your accuracy testing? Is it being fairly comparable to the other self defense loads, hunting loads, whatever that's out there?
Yeah, we haven't seen any real difference, and that was something we had to iterate on. Is originally there is actually a little bit of a boat tail to the round, just so we could fit it in a little bit further, basically. And we actually, what you'll notice is there isn't, and we've noticed that the actual bearing surface on the round actually gets us a lot better accuracy to where we're comparable to anything else that we've been able to shoot with on the market. So we don't see any compromise in accuracy or anything else.
You know what? I never thought about that, but that, yeah, the bearing surface would come into play with something like that. That's an interesting thought that never crossed my mind until now.
So just so you know, whenever I originally was sketching out the round and doing all the computer-aided engineering and analysis on it, I was like, oh, it's a no-brainer. This needs to have a small boat tail on it. And so we went through all the first iterations of the small boat tail, and we were running into some of the barrels with a slower twist rate. We were keyholing. And we were running into a lot of different issues from a stability standpoint. And then basically we just eliminated that boat tail and it went away. And it's been 100% reliable and very, very much accurate ever since. But that's sort of the point of, you know, computer-aided engineering is great. And all these analysis tools are great. But actually running these through on practical platforms will also, there's no substitute for real testing. So, and that's why the bullet design is the way it is. There is no boat tail on this.
Right. And you bring up a good point with these weights and lengths. Also, length is a, you know, that bearing surface and the length is an issue as it pertains to twist rates. Have you run into any issues where, you know, is it tuned pretty much for anything mainstream that's out there, or have you ran into certain, you know, brands or models that it just doesn't work well with those twist rates?
So with the final production round that it has the higher bearing surface that will be commercially available, we have run into zero issues with any twist rate that we see that's commercially available, period. Like I said, we ran into some issues early on in the early days of R&D, and that's when we sort of iterated on the design. And after we iterated on the design, we've not run into anything. It is perfectly reliable on every platform we've tested and every twist weight we've tested.
All right. Well, that sounds like it's going to work. Have y'all already got a lot of buzz? I mean, do you have any instructors, trainers, anybody like that that's come by and looked at it, maybe at SHOT Show or that you talked with before?
Yeah, so we've had a few stop by at SHOT Show, as well as we've had some soft sort of confidential releases at NASGW, mm-hmm. sort of behind closed doors, et cetera. And so we basically have a good lineup of the initial production will be 285,000 rounds that is currently in production right now. And we have let's just say we have a healthy percentage of that set aside for T&E reviewers, as well as get in front of instructors just to since it's to really have some time box trigger with it. So to address that is everybody who showed interest, we will give them their fair share of behind trigger time and give the throw a few rounds their way.
Right. Very cool. Because I know that's you know, that's probably a big deal when you're talking about something, especially if you're pushing it for self-defense, to have some of these more well-known trainers and stuff that's out there, you know, that you know, give their opinion of it, check it out. That's gonna hold a lot of weight, I think, to moving the product forward for sure.
Exactly.
Now, moving forward into the, you know, what you were talking about, the long range and combating the wind drift and the new designs that are kind of like in the works right now. What kind of ranges are we talking about with those? Are we talking about extending the ranges that are you can currently get now, or are we talking about making it more accurate at those ranges? What's the end game for those rifle rounds?
So to start things off with the caveat, these are still very much into development, so that being said up front, but the design that we're trying to work with and what we're trying to get around, if we really want to make where with comp ARs, you can already, you know, shoot up to 1,000 yards under ideal conditions. There's plenty of comp guns that you can. We're really trying to, so our specialty is powder development. So we're really trying to develop the powder to where with a heavier, our idealized weight here is 105 grains. Is really what we're shooting for. But it will still fit in a regular AR mag. So what we're trying to do is set it to where you can get a solid 1,000 to 1,200 real conditions and not have to have a super long barrel either, so you have an extremely slow burning powder. We're trying to set this up to where it really works with 16.5, 18.5 inch, you know, combat length barrels versus bench gun. So that's what we're truly iterating towards, but I will fully admit you will not see this in Q4 of 2019. This will be further out, probably 2020.
I got you. That's understandable. I was just curious about the concept. I mean, with everybody, when they've got a product they're thinking about or working on, usually they've got an end game, you know, in mind. And was kind of curious if we were talking self-defense, if we were talking hunting, if we were talking competition, you know, where you were coming down with the development on that.
Yeah, no, we really want to make it where it's a hunting capable round. I mean, competition is great, et cetera, but we want this to be usable under, you know, real weather conditions, not under idealized conditions with very specialized built.
Right.
And the AR platform is, you can build almost anything around it because of how modularized it is, but we really want it to be viable from a practical standpoint with normal barrel lengths, normal rigs to actually shoot to longer ranges.
Mm-hmm. And you know, with the current state of weather in the country right now with this polar vortex and all that other stuff, you know, you bring up weather, and that's something that we haven't touched on with the primers, the powder design, all of that stuff. What's the weather testing? What is all of that yielded? How does it look?
So far, so good. I mean, we've been testing under natural extremes and not this sort of polar vortex that's sort of thrown everybody for a loop, I think. But I used to live up in Illinois, and I'm glad I don't live up in Illinois anymore. So but we've been testing it down to, you know, below freezing temperatures all the way up to the hot summer temperatures. So and then we're going to be doing full NATO temperature testing, et cetera, to do the full gamut for a couple of the police departments and potential military contracts we're working on. But so far, that's what we've done weather-wise. We've yet to do the official NATO weather temperature test, the temperature swing test, but nonetheless, that is in the queue for some of the contracts we're working on right now.
Gotcha. And is there any type of sealer that's on this ammunition?
Say that again.
Any sealer, like you know, like you see on a lot of the NATO rounds, you'll have a sealer around the primer, and then sometimes you'll have it around the projectile as well.
We plan on incorporating that for we will most likely for the production run, which is like I said, currently ongoing. I actually have a sealer around the bullet for the primer. That will probably be in subsequent production runs. We will the rounds for initial T&E and testing will most likely not be fully sealed. Because of the length of the bullet, we'll rely on the bearing surface to provide most of our pull strength. However, for most NATO pressure specs, NATO just testing specs, you need to have a little bit higher pull strength than that. So you'll probably see a sealer around the lip of the case just to alleviate those concerns.
Right. And does all of that affect your pressures and stuff like that when you start talking about sealers and pull strength and stuff like that?
It absolutely does, and that's why we test and iterate with it, because there's no such thing as adding something in material wise, you know, to the bearing surface right there and not affecting those. So we're well aware of the changes that those incur, and like I said, we've designed around that as a result.
Gotcha. Now with the primers, are we talking, and you don't have to disclose any confidential information, of course, but is that a you know, an off-the-shelf primer that you guys are using, is it something fairly standard?
The primer is an off-the-shelf primer. Like, okay. I said, the only thing that's interesting here is the powder. The primer itself, we purposely tried to do something. We want to make it to where production is relatively reliable process for us. And even over the past few years, there's been shortages on regular primer. So the last thing you want to do is one of the more complex parts of the supply chain throw in a real kink that could really, you know, stop up progress at a very key time. So we use off-the-shelf primers. There's no special engineering that went into the primer itself.
Gotcha. I guess what I'm asking is, other than the powder development, are the components, yeah, I guess because they're outsourced or whatever, they're all available then on the market?
So the bullet itself, or we're working with a partner that is specifically built to our specifications.
Okay.
And then the powder is then our own custom tuned powder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, shell shot cases, you can buy shell shot cases, the primers you can buy. The bullet, while it is outsourced, is, like I said, built to our specs. And then we do a special coating process afterwards as well.
Oh, okay. I got you. What I was getting at there, I'm a reloader, and I know there's a lot of them out there watching and listening, and anytime we talk about ammunition, that's usually the first thing that's going through their minds is, hey, can I, you know, if I buy a bunch of this, can I reload it? But it sounds like there's a few hang-ups with y'all's stuff. Is there any plans on the powder development, on bringing that to the market as maybe a secondary avenue of revenue?
So we've discussed that. Obviously, right now it's early days, so we're just trying to get this ammunition fully commercially produced and out the door and in people's hands. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, yes, that is a part of the business model. But that's cool. That's a little bit further down the road, just because we're trying to get the fully loaded ammo out the door first.
Sure. Yeah, and I think most companies deal that way. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot at all there.
Yeah. Sure. No. Understood.
So
I will say one interesting part of this process has been. Initially, so yeah, as I've stated, some of this is outsourced, et cetera. So one of our concerns was, how quickly would this be copied, et cetera. And don't get me wrong, there's always ammunition manufacturers out there. I'm never going to say, like, this is so unique, no one could knock it off, that sort of thing. But I will say there's been a lot of pain and iteration that's gone into this. Mm-hmm. And the finalized solution is very clean from our perspective. And frankly, there's a lot of variables that are just so, that are I call the Goldilocks variables, that they've been iterated to be just right, that it makes it to where a reloading prospect or something else would honestly be fairly challenging, because there's just a very, very narrow window that everything can fall within to make this work the way it needs to work.
Well, and I think, too, you're looking at, from a reloading standpoint, you're talking about, you're not talking about a mainstream brass case, so probably going to be more expensive than, I would figure, more expensive than a brass case. And then, proprietary design on a powder that you guys would potentially bring to the market could be a little more expensive on the powder, and then the projectile the same way. So, it kind of depends on what the price point of, the loaded, the manufactured ammunition is, as to whether it's even worth trying to reload a lot of times.
No, and that's a very valid point, and I do think a lot of those would point against reloading, even once the potential components could be available at a later date. I will say we have priced our MSRP to where we are sort of right in the middle of the higher end offensive rounds that are on the market right now. Our MSRP is just under $1.40 a round, so it's $1.38, $1.39. That it's right there within a penny of that as far as per round is concerned. Mm-hmm. Which with some of the other high end defensive ammo loads that we found is very much on par. We are neither the highest nor the lowest. We're sort of right in the middle there with the pack.
Right. Now, something I did not ask earlier, and typically when we're talking about, designing new things and innovation, is patents. Are there any patents involved with your stuff? Or I don't,
Yes, there is some IP pending. Obviously, because it's the earlier days, nothing's been granted yet, but there are some.
Yeah, that's a drawn-out process. It's a very,
yeah,
very
exactly.
Drawn-out process. Okay, well, that's good that... it's always encouraging to hear that companies that are innovating things are. I know it's a real pain to go through that process, but at least it affords you some type of protection.
Exactly. I mean, that is one of the concerns. This has been a long time coming and a lot of development. And so the last thing we wanted is, even though the more we've done this, the more we realize truly imitating this exact round would be a little challenging. It doesn't mean a company with a lot more resources than us, such as one of the big boys in manufacturing, couldn't do it. And we're not so arrogant or naive to believe otherwise. So, no, we definitely think IP protection is necessary.
Well, the
it's a competitive industry.
Yeah, and a lot of the bigger companies, I mean, they're they're a little resistant to anything innovative. They've made small strides. I've seen them move to the solid copper projectiles, for example. I've seen them move into the, you know, whatever, the poly-coated or the, you know, the coated projectiles and that sort of things. But, you know, outside of that, you just really don't see a lot of innovation in the, whatever you want to call it, the old school, I guess, ammunition manufacturers. So it's really interesting when guys like you come in and kind of shake up the game a little bit.
Yeah, no, we've noticed the same, and that's why we felt like this was a good market case for us to do something here, is with 9mm being very common, with suppressor ownership going up year over year by a significant percentage, and then by just the fact of by updating all the material that are used in the system with sort of the most modern stuff that's available, as well as having our own understanding of powder engineering, we felt like there was a real opportunity here to present something that was new and interesting and could have some real potential. So that's why we did what we did. But yeah, I would agree with you. In general, there's overarching in the firearms industry, it's more of a glacial industry rather than a rapid change industry. Nothing happens real fast.
Right. Because I'm just now seeing, what is it, the polymer projectiles or whatever, or the poly-coated or whatever they're called. I'm just now seeing the major manufacturers do that, and that stuff's been around for years and years now. You know, so
exactly.
Really slow to the game. But that's great for the smaller companies. I mean, that does allow a lot of room for you guys to get out there and innovate, you know, push those boundaries, which is wonderful.
Yeah, no, that's the real benefit in this case of being, that's the benefit of being a smaller company, is you can afford to be a lot more nimble, where the big guys have to, you know, when they move, it's a really big move, but it takes a long time for that process to happen.
Right.
So during that time frame of that occurring, there can be innovation that occurs that gives us that market opportunity.
Right. So we are, looks like we're up against our time here. Brett, if you would, how do people get in touch with you? How do they learn more about Seismic Ammunition?
So if you just go to our website at seismicammo.com, you can sign up for email. You can email us directly, info@seismicammo.com. That's probably the easiest and most straightforward way. You can get some sort of general info about the ammunition. And if you want to have a more detailed conversation, I'm more than happy to entertain that as well. And just email the info address or me directly at Brett, that's B-R-E-T-T, at seismicammo.com, and more than happy to chat with you.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you for joining us and geeking out on ammo here a little bit today. I really do appreciate it, Brett.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity. I've had fun myself.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.